When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Season 2 of the 147 Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour Champion and former Champion of the World, the magician, Sean Murphy. How are you doing, Sean? Where in the world are you this week?
I'm well. How are you, Phil? Yes, no, I'm on the island of Ireland, and I'm up in Belfast at the moment, and of course it's my birthday in a few days. So everything is about the big 4-1. Not much else to talk about, really. The snooker scene's quite quiet. There's no qualifiers at the moment. Thankfully, not for me.
The big 4-1. I've got to pull you on that. Are you really claiming that as a big one, the 4-1?
Listen, the 4-0 came and went. I've got to be honest. I was a bit apprehensive about the 4-0. Came and went. Wasn't too bad. The 4-1 is on the horizon. Of course, that's about, what is that, 20 years since you were 41? How did you feel about that?
Just be very careful, because we have got a guest on the show this evening and you're going to be offending him if you're claiming that I'm old. So just watch what you're saying. Okay, let's bring him into the podcast. Now, it was always our intention, just over a year ago, we started the 147 Podcast and we wanted it to be a snooker podcast that's not a snooker podcast. This was always the idea. We didn't want to get snooker players on and talk about snooker with them, because let's face it, one snooker player on a podcast is more than enough snooker players for any podcast. We will leave that to the likes of Phil and Nick on Talking Snooker, Dave Hendon, Shabzi over on Framed. So our idea was that we would get people on who are in the public eye and love snooker, so we can talk about their love of snooker. And that all begins tonight when we introduce our first... I was going to say our first ever guest, but it's not. It's our first guest that isn't going to try and get us to jump out of an aeroplane after John McDonald tried that one. So we are going to introduce you to a real legend of Britpop. Now, this is a man who was at the forefront of indie music in the 90s when everything exploded, but not just then, right through to today. He, in fact, was playing a gig last night. As he's just told us, he was up rather late and he's just arrived home. So we say a very, very... good evening, a warm welcome to the 147 Podcast, to the frontman of Shed 7. Good evening, Rick Witter. How are you, Rick?
Well, hello, guys. How are you? Thank you very much for having me on. And if you do want me to push you out of an aeroplane, I'm more than happy to assist.
Do you know, it nearly happened to that, Rick. Seriously. John McDonald, the MC from the darts, he...
We very skillfully avoided falling out of an aeroplane with style. We will not be going down that road again.
It was only thanks to the weather that we didn't end up doing it, and we're grateful of that wind, I will tell you now.
Right, let's leave aeroplanes alone then.
So now just for anyone out there that's thinking, Shed 7, I know that name, Shed 7, right. Just Google Shed 7. I'm from York, Rick's from York. We actually went to the same school. I was a couple of years below Rick at school. But when I tell people about Shed 7, they're always like, well, I know the name. And then you get them to Google it, And everyone's amazed at just how many Shed 7 songs they know, because you've had, how many top 40 singles did you have or have you had?
I think we've had about 15, 16, maybe 17. We are one of those bands, it's funny, especially more so in the 90s when we were doing it, we could pretty much kind of wander around wherever we wanted and not really get massively recognised, but then everyone would know every one of our songs, which is a bit weird really, but nice, because it meant we, you know, could have our own space. But the older I get, the more I seem to get recognised, so, you know, I've donned the false moustaches every now and again.
Fantastic, and why not? Yes, I'll put my cards on the table very early here. I went to school in York, as people know, the greatest city in the world. Rick, you'll back me up on that one, yeah?
Massively so, yes. So okay. Now, obviously, our school tossed out some quite cool people, didn't they? I think did Chris Helm went to our school?
Chris Helm did, who was a singer in the Seahorses. In fact, you know, weirdly, I saw Chris the other week, and this was so strange. I had Spotify playing on like a random shuffle on my car. And the Seahorses, You Can Talk to Me, just came on as I drove past Chris.
How very bizarre.
How weird.
I remember seeing Chris busking, blinded by the sun outside Woolworths in York way back when.
Amazing.
And then the next thing, he's playing it in massive arenas.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, I had the same thing with you. You were our school band. You were Broccoli Haven. And
yes.
A few years later, I saw you at the Priory Street Arts Centre in York, and I saw you play at school and all. And then a couple of years later, there you are, playing on the biggest of stages, your top 10 singles and everything else, and it was, yeah, pretty incredible. Now,
we used to get top off at school, because the school band we were in, we were only like 14 or 15, and we'd play in pubs like the Spotted Cow. And we'd actually put posters up down the school corridors advertising the fact we were playing in pubs, and teachers are going, "What are you doing? Can't advertise to your school, yeah, that you're playing in pubs."
Now, I have to interject just at this point, because the bit we've all just breezed past it, and you know, everyone out there listening to this will be wondering this. What was your sweet preference of choice to steal from the pick and mix in Woolworths?
Probably those green triangles, whatever they are.
The green triangles. Mine was the blackcurrant. There was like, it was like a you know, the what do you know, the black, the purple one out of Quality
with the nut in it.
Yeah,
but in Woolworths there was like a it was like that, but it was like a blackcurrant thing, and it was chief place in the pick and mix aisle in Woolworths. It was just that you mentioned Woolworths, and I, you know, we shouldn't let that pass.
Well, for me, it was
We were all shot. I don't care who you are. We were all shoplifters of the early 90s.
This is true.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head there, Sean. I can't quite believe this. So when I was about 8. I've got a 4 years older brother, and he took me into town, not in the York Woolworths, but he made me steal a packet of spearmint gum, and I got caught. Next thing you know, I'm in the office at the back, waiting for my dad to come and get me. Got leathered.
We've all been in that office. Now, do you think any of us are responsible for the closure of Woolworths? You know, they've since gone bye-bye.
You can't. You probably
get. Are we all jointly responsible for Woolworths going under?
I blame Chris Helm for busking outside and stopping people going in. That's what I blame.
Yeah, that's what shut it down. Now, I must say, I do not advocate stealing in any way whatsoever. It's the worst trick in the book. Please don't steal.
That's the clear difference between us.
Absolutely. Right.
Rick, so listen, it's wonderful to have you on. It is fabulous to have it. Of course, you know, we're all massive, massive fans of Shed 7. You know, you were part of us all, you know, our generation, part of our growing up, and part of our, you know, journey through that part of life. And, you know, forever will be, you know, when I bang my iTunes on and I listen to the music of growing up through the 90s and trying to work out who we were as people, you know, you feature so heavily in there. But listen, you know, we are the snooker podcast that isn't the snooker podcast. What's your connection to snooker? What's your first memory of snooker? And talk to us a little bit about how your interest in the game developed, where it came from, and how you've ended up here.
Well, so when I was a lad, I played pool a lot. I was really into pool. I was one of these annoying kids who, if you put money on the table, winner stays on, I'd be on all night. So I've always kind of loved the art of clicking the balls. But when I was probably about 13 or 14, I started going down to the local snooker club, which sadly isn't where it should be anymore, in Stonebow in York. There is still one in York, and that's all right. It's quite near the Barbican Centre, actually. So it just started going there, like maybe once a week. And at first, you know, I have to say to you, it's such an admirable thing to do. I mean, it's so difficult to do. I mean, obviously, if you put time and effort into it, you get better at anything that you do. But maybe going once a week and playing 5 or 6 frames on 4 or 5 pints is a totally different matter. And that's kind of what I've always done. But I just love the science of it. I just love the colours. I love the sounds. And everything about it just clicks in my head. It's just an amazing thing. And I equally watching it. So I do tend to watch as much of it as I can if I'm not busy doing other things. So, you know, I've got the old Eurosport and I watch all of the foreign ones. So I just love it. And it'd be absolutely amazing to go and beat you at some point.
It's funny. I used to play in Stonebow as well, same as you. And that was right next door to Fibbers in York, which was one of the main music venues at the time as well. Sean, something I've not told you about, Rick. Back when I was doing the ITV snooker, I was on, I think it was the Guildhall in Preston, had the World Grand Prix or the Players' Championships. And Rick tweeted, "Great to see announcer Phil on the snooker." Like, and I'm looking at it. I'm sat with one of the producers from ITV, and I was like, "Oh, that's nice." And he said, "What's that for?" I said, "Oh, it's Rick from Shed 7 has just tweeted he's seen me on the snooker." And he said to me, he says, "Oh, Shed 7, I love Shed 7. And it was a guy called Martin Reardon who puts all the montages together at the end. And he said, "Do you know what? I'm going to put one of their tracks on the montage tomorrow. I'm going to use..." And I said, "Right, definitely, because I'll tell him." So I messaged Rick. I said, "Look, he's going to use one of your tracks. I'm not sure which one, but he's going to use one of your tracks on the montage tomorrow." And Rick messaged me the next day and he's like, "Right, that's it. Life goal completed. My music's been on the snooker. Happy days."
And it's so true. Honestly, it's so true. You know, I just even hearing JV commentate, it's just an absolute joy. You know, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
So well played, everybody. I mean, I'm going to write the next snooker song. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, go
on. Sorry.
I was going to say, we put out on Twitter that you were coming on the podcast and we've had puns galore, some of them from the Shed 7 account. I don't know who runs that, whether it's Paul or who, but Shed 147, Parallel Peter Lines was one of my own. This Bays was ours. Magic John Streets, one for the kids there. John Streets, the classic referee. Better Ryan Days from our friends at Mariners in Torquay. Shot to Nothing to Live Down, like that one. That's one of yours, Rick, I think. People
have got far much time on their hands, far too much time brilliant. On their hands, haven't they?
This Cue Down. From Tony J. Bob. On an Island with Q, Del O'Brien. Now, Chasing Rainbows, Chasing Liang Wenbo. I quite like that. A few people have been doing that in recent time, from Francis Ferguson. And Tony J. Bob, he suggested that Shed 147 should re-record Snooker Loopy. Would you be up for that then, Rick?
I'd be well up for that. That would make my life.
Now, we do know Barry Hearn. Should we ping a message down there to him, Sean, do you reckon?
Well, yeah, I quite like the original Snooker Loopy with Chaz and Dave, but I have to say, I think us lot with Shed 7, I think we could be onto something there. Obviously, we've got Shed 7, wonderful band of the 90s and obviously to the modern day, part of everyone's youth. I'm fairly musical. I like to play the piano, depending on how many beers I've had. Phil, where are you going to come into this?
Well, I used to sing in a band, Sean.
Did you?
I used to sing in a band. In fact, you know what? Shed 7 never won the Battle of the Bands in Fibbers in York, and neither did my band. So we've got something in common there. We entered it a couple of times, never won it.
Hang on, I'm just getting a call from Simon Cowell. No, but Rick, seriously, right? Seriously, for a second, like, just, you know, because for all of us of a certain age, you know, we were all there watching from home and it was part of our life. Genuinely, it was part of all of our life, you know, our journey to becoming adults, our journey to becoming where we are today. You know, those early days and those days and then those hedonistic years where it was just completely all go all the time. Like the, you know, I nearly said TGI's, that's a restaurant. But, you know, thinking about TFI Friday and stuff like that, you know, what were those days like, you know, where you were on Friday nights, go live, performing to the nation, you know, back in the day, that was just all part of our journey to where we are today. What was that like?
It was quite full on. My dad always used to say to me, "You need to every now and again, you need to stop and smell the roses because it's, you know, it's just so full on." Granted, it was an incredible time, but it also became our job. So, yes, you might have a hit, but then you, where's the next hit coming from? And then, by the way, you've got to go to Spain tomorrow. And then when you get back from Spain, you've got to start writing your next album. So it was just total full on all the time. No time to even stop and think, really. So it was only really with age and a little bit more when we can kind of dictate our own terms slightly now, and we get to decide what we do and when we do it. And it was only kind of when we started to turn that corner that we kind of stopped and looked back and thought, wow, we did that and that happened. Yeah, and even TFI, you know, that, until Sean Ryder ruined it, that was nerve-wracking because it was completely live at 6 o'clock on a Friday night or whenever it was. And if you're performing, you're literally getting that 5, 4, 3, and then you're just in everybody's living rooms live. So you've got to be good, you know, so performance-wise, obviously. But yeah, you know, just amazing times. And I feel so lucky that we kind of were part of that, because I can't really ever see a music scene like that ever again, just the way that the music industry has changed so much and social media has changed everything so much. There's so many different charts. I don't think you'd ever see a time again now where a 10 p.m. newsreader is going to say which of these bands is going to get to number one. I think sadly that's all gone. But then on the positives, it's a lot easier to spread the word now via social media. You can get your message out there a lot quicker and to a lot more people.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you know, there is actually another snooker link with TFI Friday. Are you aware of this, Rick?
I'm not sure if I am.
Rob Walker, who's a very famous commentator, yeah, and the MC for BBC Snooker at the Barbican, yeah, at York and at the Crucible, he was actually on TFI Friday as a person who would do anything to get on TV. And he could suck his stomach in, make it look like an elephant. Yeah, that was Rob Walker, yeah.
Was that really Rob Walker?
That was Rob. They brought him back when they did the reboot a few years ago. They brought Rob back and got him to do it again. He can still do it. Amazingly, he can still do that. It's crazy.
Was it the section, was it called Freak or Unique?
That was it, yeah, Freak or Unique, yeah. And I'm still not sure which Rob is.
He took his top off and he sucked his torso in and it looked like the face of an elephant.
That's right, yeah, that was Rob.
They had him back.
On TFI Friday.
They brought TFI back onto the screens maybe 10 years ago or so. Mm, and they brought all really famous, like Freak or Uniques and Ugly Bloke and all that stuff. Stuff you couldn't do now, you know, you just wouldn't get it. And Rob Walker was one of the people they brought back. Now, he could have been in either category. They brought him back for Freak or Unique and they said, can you still do it? He took his top off and he still did it. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Rick, thinking back to those days of Britpop, that was, as Britpop was sort of exploding, we had a massive almost boost in snooker. You had the Class of 92 coming through. So Ronnie O'Sullivan with his almost indie haircuts. You've got Mark Williams, John Higgins, all coming. Did you see a link between Britpop and snooker? Because they both seemed to sort of explode at the same time again, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I certainly did, because I'm just a big fan of it. I think you're dead right. Yeah, there was that kind of Class of 92 thing going on. I've heard a story. I've never met John Higgins, but somebody once told me that when they were growing up, they used to say, we're going to get a Shed 7 when they went to get a haircut. And I'm not quite sure how true that is. But they used to get this haircut that was called a Shed. So they used to say, and we're going to go and get a Shed 7. Wow. So when you next see him, can you ask him if that's true?
I will, yeah. We know John very well, so I shall ask him that. Go on then, while you're talking about Shed 7, I've got to ask you, I've seen many, many answers to this over the years. Let's have a definitive one.
How did we get our band name?
You've got to tell us, come on, where does the name Shed 7 come from? Because there's rumours galore.
Well, so it got to the point... We formed in 1990, and when it got to like 2001 and we were still being asked that question, it got so boring that we used to try and think of funny reasons why we were called it. So we used to say that Alan lost his virginity when he was 7 in a shed, which obviously isn't true. There used to be 11
what?
Of us.
What? What?
We used to say that there used to be 11 of us, but we shed 7 members, and now there's only 4. Oh. So, you know, but the real boring reason is this: me and Tom were going, I think we'd decided to go to Manchester on the train for the day to Affleck's Palace shopping. How very 1991. Just the other side of Leeds train station, there was 10 huge train sheds where obviously they just put them to do work on them or whatever. And each one had a massive door, and each door said shed one, shed two, shed three. But shed seven didn't have a door on it. So I said to Tom, that must be shed seven. And we were trying to find a band name at that very time. So it's not the most glamorous of names, having shed in the title, but, you know, we could have been called Gravel Seven or something like that, couldn't we?
This is true, and it's worked. So there we go. We've got an answer to the question. Now, we have had some questions in on Twitter. So James Frith on Twitter, he says, snooker players continuing to be successful into their 40s, as are the sheds. Does success get more enjoyable as the years go by?
Massively so. I think you just appreciate it all the more the older you get, and appreciate, not luck, because I think we're good at what we do, you know, but equally, it's a fickle business that we're in. So, you know, you just never know what's going to come next. So to be able to still write good songs, which we've just done, by the way, we've got a new album coming out in January next year. Just sort of get that in there quick. Pre-order it at shed7.com. I'm not doing my job otherwise, am I?
Don't worry, we've got the plugs coming up. It's all in here. We're professionals.
Well, to be fair, I don't like it when bands come back with new stuff and they say, it's the best thing we've ever done. It's brilliant. But I can't lie, I'm with them. You know, after all these years, I think we're getting right up there now. I think we've learned what we're doing after all these years. And I think what we've just done sounds amazing, and I can't wait for people to hear it.
That's great. Well, the first single, Kissing California, from the new album is out now. So if you go on Spotify, wherever you get your music from, you will find Kissing California by Shed 7 on there right now if you want to have a listen to it. Anyway, Sean.
Yeah, one of the other questions we've had was from John Schofield on Facebook, and he was saying, Rick, if you hadn't been a musician, what do you think you would have been?
Well, when I was about 6 or 7, I wanted to be the Fall guy. Do you remember that?
Lee Majors?
Yeah. I wanted to be a stuntman.
Sorry, this is where you're both showing your age.
This is before Sean's age. He was a stuntman, basically, Sean.
Yeah, right. You're missing out here, Sean, quite a lot. It was a great program. Okay. It was like, do you remember Chips?
Chips, California Highway Patrol, come on.
Yeah, Phil's told me about it. Yeah, Phil. Yeah.
That kind of American kind of show thing. He was a stuntman, and he used to go and was he a police kind of bloke as well, or was it just stunts?
I think he did stunts and solved crimes.
He solved crimes.
As you do.
Yeah, of course you do. Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to do.
Like Murder, She Wrote.
Yes. Yeah, with jumping out off ledges into barrels, things like that, Sean. Yeah, it was amazing.
So you wanted to be on Murder, She Wrote is what you're basically saying.
That's what I was just getting to. That was the point, yeah. I wanted to be Colt Seavers. Colt Seavers is what I wanted to be. But then I went through a phase of falling out of trees, ripping my ear half off, going down big hills on go-karts and slamming my head into lampposts. I've got my head stuck in a turnstile on the Torquay beach pier thing. So I got bored of hurting myself, so I moved on. So when I was about 9, I got into music around about when I was about 9. And immediately, archetypal hairbrush mirror doing the moves from about 9 years old. So it's something I've always wanted to do. So again, I feel quite lucky that I've managed to get to do what I've always loved doing as a job, which is great.
There was always a story at school. Tell me if this is true or not. It was maybe a myth, but you go for your careers interview with whoever does the careers advice, and you walk in there, and I'd heard someone said to you, Rick or Richard, you know, what would you like to do? And you said, oh, I'm going to be a rock star, a rock and roll star or something. They were like, yeah, okay. So what would you? Let's have a look at what you could actually do. Something. Did that happen?
Yeah. I was told it's a pipe dream, grow up and think about your future was pretty much the exact wording of what that careers teacher said to me. But also, do you remember, I don't know if you did this, but when in English, at some point in your English career, well, you would have had to have done it, Phil. You have to stand up in front of the class and pick a subject and do a talk on it for about 20 minutes. Did you ever do
that?
Yeah,
we did. Yeah, I remember doing that, yeah.
Yeah,
Phil, so, I can tell you, Phil wouldn't have struggled with that.
It's a strong point, I'll be honest.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So I did a talk on the bands that we were in at the time, but Tom, who's the bass player, who's also in our year at school, he did it with his English teacher in front of his class, and he also did the bands that we were in at the time. So he had a selection of photographs that he could show, And then he spoke about how we formed and the gigs that we do. And then he played like a song, a demo that we'd recorded. And the teacher said to him, "That's very good, Tom. Very well presented. And the band sound quite good. However, if you lose the singer, you'll go a lot further."
Wow.
So, I don't know if that teacher's still around, but I'd love to buy her a drink.
Do you know what? I can guess which one it was, actually. Now, on the subject of young people, we've had a question in from Nikki Pullen. Now, Nikki is the mum of Liam Pullen, who's from York, just turned 18, and he's just got a tour card. He will be on the World Snooker Tour this coming season. Or he is on it now. Right. He's from York. I think he's from Haxby or Wigginton.
Brilliant.
Literally just turned 18 years old. Now, Nikki, his mum, she's asked us, Rick, what's the biggest highlight of your career so far? And do you play snooker?
Well, as I've touched upon, I do play snooker, but my stance is all wrong. I think that's what I blame it on. I remember getting a 38 break once, and boy, did every other table in that room know that I'd got a 38. I do really enjoy playing it, but it is quite frustrating because it's so difficult, you know, and that's why I admire guys like you, Sean, so much, because I watch you lot doing it, and it's just amazing. It's just incredible.
Yeah. That's very flattering of you to say. I mean, I'm sort of 1 foot in the musical camp, you know, not like you at all, but, you know, I love music, obviously, as much as everyone else does, but I do play a little bit as well. You know, I play the piano, and you know, I have such an admiration for people like yourselves, musicians who are just in that world. I think, you know, if I hadn't have gone into snooker, and I do remember my own conversations with my careers advisor that was very, very similar to the ones that you just mentioned. What do you really want to do? You know, I'm going to be a snooker player. But you know what? Yeah. What are you actually going to do?
Be sensible and grow up. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know, we should really have a proper conversation this. Now, listen, present company accepted, obviously, other than myself, who would you say your favourite players are out there in the world of snooker?
So it goes without saying, Ronnie's always entertaining because you just never know what you're going to get. And he can be so frustrating when he's not on the ball with stuff because he is so good at doing it. And I do like John. I like watching John play. But as I say, I'm an Uber fan. I'll watch it and just thoroughly enjoy it for what it is.
And are you aware of any other musicians out there in the world that are big snooker fans? Because we hear, like, Jimmy White is very famously very good friends with a couple of members of the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Yes,
I've been lucky enough to meet them over the years. A good friend of mine, Mukesh Palmer, who was the resident pro in the club that I grew up in, is very good friends with one of the musicians from Kasabian, Chris, right. And I know him very well, and I know that he likes to play. Are you aware of any other musicians out there in the world that are keen snooker players? I remember Jimmy told me a story years ago that the Rolling Stones, for instance, wherever they tour, they insist on a snooker table being backstage.
Yes,
I've played the game so much. So are you aware of other musicians who enjoy the game?
I did have a chat with Fran Healy out of Travis a while back and discovered that he really liked snooker too. So I did actually say to him, we must get together at some point and have a frame or two. And we can sing at each other while we play.
I know, Badly Drawn Boy, Damon Goff, big snooker fan.
Is he a big fan?
Big snooker fan. Yeah, he messages me every now and then and talks about different things. He watches the highlights after gigs when the BBC events are on. Because he complained, I think, they don't show highlights, the final on the Sunday night. And I think he had a gig and he got home and he's like, where's the final? I wanted to watch the end of the final. And
if you've been invested in the whole competition, then if you've missed the final, there should be some way to be able to watch it back, or the highlights at least. It's the same with us. You can ask any band member, if we're on tour and there's a competition on, which usually does happen because we do this thing called Shedcember, which is basically November and December every other year. So when you're on at York and whatnot, it's on in the dressing room. It's just there. It's like everyone else says, "Oh God, it's so rock and roll in here, isn't it?" And I think, yeah, it is really rock and roll in here. Yeah.
Well, there's no Shedcember this year. I think you're touring in October, but
yes,
we'll have to get you down to York. Yeah, get you down.
Yeah, and I might, yeah. That would be great. I might come down.
Come beat Sean. We'll blindfold him.
I think I saw you playing there, Sean, probably about maybe 8 or 9 years ago. I used to do a radio show on a Sunday evening, and I had to go home past the Barbican, so I blagged my way in, and I think you were playing. But the only problem is with me, if I have a pint while I'm watching, I need a wee. And then you have to wait for the end of the frame, and then you're not allowed in for the next frame, so you're stood in a corridor watching it on a big screen when it's just literally through that wall there. So I like to sit at home now and have free reign of the toilet.
I've got bad news for you. I think that's just an age thing. Yeah. I think it comes to us all. I think it just comes to us all.
Now, you mentioned the new album coming out, I think, in the new year. You've got the tour, I believe, October sort of time. The single, Kissing California, is out now. What can we expect from the new album? Because a couple of years ago, you released Instant Pleasures. You had a big old break, and then you came back with Instant Pleasures. And like you said, when bands come back, I'm always a bit weary of how it's going to go. And I was lucky enough to go to, you did like a pre-tour show in Pocklington Arts Centre, yeah, in New York. I was lucky enough to go to that. And I'll be honest, I was just like, whoa, this new stuff's great. So a couple of years on now, another new album. Well, what can we expect? It's how long?
It's going to be 6 years.
Wow.
Instant Pleasures came out November 2017.
Christ. Which
is just, I don't know where the time goes. But yeah, the other album took about 16 years to write, so 6 years is nothing really for us, is it? Well, so this one, for me, it was written between March and December last year, which is pretty unheard of for us as well. It usually takes us a lot longer, but we've just got into this right good run of just coming up with ideas. And that was a right pleasure, because when the tap turns and stops, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. So that was ace. It's all, I guess the key points for this album is life, death, love, sex, stalking, and recreation.
That sounds like a normal Thursday in Sean's life.
I was going to say, where I live in Dublin, they call that Tuesday.
And is there any change of style? Can we expect the big bangers that we normally get from Sheds?
Yeah, to be honest, we're not the type of band to sit down and discuss it. We just get on with it. So, and I've been saying this a lot recently as well. When I read about bands who are on the comeback and got a new album, and they say, we wrote 60 songs and we've whittled it down to 12. We don't do that. We write about 15 songs and whittle it down to 12 and then put the songs that we've not used on the album as bonus tracks on something else. And we do that because we know it's good enough. You know, we don't, if we start an idea and it's not really going anywhere, just shelve it and move on. So yeah, it's very Shed 7. If you're a fan of Shed 7, you're going to love it. But I do honestly think this time that there's going to be some people who perhaps don't particularly like us who might have been for a little bit of a surprise, but it's still very us. You know, and these songs will fit into a set of songs and not stick out like a sore thumb. The great thing that I've touched upon the music industry changing. So the album's not coming out till January, which gives us a good 5 months here. So we're going to probably release maybe 3 or 4 other songs off it. And then once the album's out, it's out. But to me, this is the best part of being in a band this time now. We've done our bit. We're happy with it. And we just can't wait for everyone else to hear it. Because once people have got it, it's not ours anymore. It's everybody's. And then at that point, we'll be asked to do another one.
Yeah, absolutely. Not quite ready. That's fair enough. Now, I've got to ask you, Sean, what's your walk on music at the Snooker?
My walk, it's Disco Inferno by the Tramps. Shocker. A.k.a. the best walk on music.
Absolute shocker. So, Rick, you've got to pick a new walk on tune. For the Magician, what should he walk? What Shed 7 song should Sean walk onto at the Snooker?
Well, it's got to be something positive and upbeat, hasn't it? So, I mean, you could do the obvious Going for Gold, or you could even do the new single, because it helps promote it then, doesn't it?
Yeah, get Kissing California on. Now, Rick, we're going to let you go in a moment, because we've taken up a lot of your time on this Sunday night, and I know you've had a busy weekend. We always end the podcast with we have a pointless question. Now, what we've done, we've pinched a couple of pointless questions that we've used on previous podcasts. We'd like you to answer them, if you could. Is that okay?
A pointless question, as in the telly program?
Well, pointless. No. These are questions that are just completely pointless. Yeah. Right. Okay, so these are ones we've had before.
Don't put too much logic into it, Rick. This is absolutely pointless.
Like, absolutely.
From the deepest, darkest depths of Phil's brain, these questions are. You know, nobody can fathom where these questions come from.
Okay, we'll only give you three.
Just before you do ask, can I just very quickly show you this?
Oh, go on. What's he doing? He does know this is an audio podcast, not a video one.
It's not
one,
great
right?
for okay. audio, this.
No,
it's not,
is it? Oh, is it not being
filmed? No, but we're watching you, Rick. It's fine. We're watching you. Oh, what's that?
Oh, that is a pointless celebrities trophy.
No, I saw this. Who are you on with? Remind me.
I've got one of those. I've got one of those.
Nice. I like it.
Who are you on with, Rick?
I like it. I was on with Mike Morris out of the Blue Tones. It was like a 90s music special, and we only went and won it.
Fantastic. Oh. Wow.
Well, listen, whilst we're on here, and it is our podcast, so I've got to shine a bit of light on it, I've got one of those as well. You've got to pick your partner. In these games, you've got to pick your partners.
Who did you have, Sean?
And I went on with CJ Demui from the Eggheads.
Wow.
Right, okay. Well, very clever, that. That's really clever.
You've got to pick your partners. I know people think I look stupid.
Well, yes.
Thank you. Halfway through the final round, where you've got to come up with a pointless question, it was what was it? What was the question that we won on? It was something like flags of the world with a picture on, or something like that.
Right.
And he nudged me and he said, "Listen, pretend like you don't know, but
yeah."
I've got three of them lined up. He said, pretend like you don't know, but we've won. And he just, out of nowhere, he produced Chad. The rest is history.
So amazing.
Interestingly then, so would all three of his answers been pointless?
All of them.
Yeah, because that's exactly what happened with us. So I'll give Mark Morris credit here. He took over on that very last question. Obviously, I was there as a team and I helped through all the other rounds, but I was a bit stumped on the last question. And I think it was something to do with some type of films. Can't quite remember the question. But anyway, he ended up getting, he chose the three answers and all of them would have been pointless.
Wow.
I'm very thankful to admit that I was involved in at least maybe maximum one of those questions episode, and it was popular culture, may have been the first or second round, and it was something to do with, it was either Victoria Beckham or the Spice Girls, and like as the question came on, it was clear that CJ didn't have a breeze.
Yeah, that's Sean's specialist topic as well, isn't it, really? So he's always going to...
The Spice Girls were my era.
I was
at my absolute peak when the Spice Girls were around.
Do you know what?
I got us out of jail on the Spice Girls question because we wouldn't have had a dime.
Do you know what? Life could have been so different for us as well, because I remember doing some type of outdoor festival in the middle of London, I think it was. And the Spice Girls were on the bill just as they were coming up. And I remember all of the Spice Girls walking past us down this road backstage. And Posh, our guitarist is called Paul Banks. And Posh said as she walked past, "Ooh, I like his eyebrows." So it could have been Posh and Banks.
Posh and Banks. That would have been very, very different, wouldn't it? Anyway, coming back to our pointless questions. So we've got three of them for you that we've used in the podcast before. First one for you, Rick. You have the ability to bring back one dead celebrity to life. Who would you choose and why?
Well, it'd have to be Elvis, wouldn't it?
Oh, wow, okay.
Elvis, I mean, how cool can you get? And what a good-looking man he was.
There you go, and Sean's nicked his hair.
Yeah, I like it.
You leave my hair alone. Nobody else can see my hair because this is an audio production. There's nothing wrong with my hair. Thank you,
there's nothing wrong with your hair. It's great. Yes,
it's amazing.
Leave it alone.
Go on then.
You two are follically challenged. Wow. Leave me alone.
Charming. Go on then, Sean.
What?
Do you have a pointless question for Rick?
No.
Well, you should do.
Hang on, I'll put my note down. Hang on a minute.
Do you know when you give a snooker player just like one job and he just messes it up?
I haven't got any pointless questions here.
He's got no, but okay, I'll ask them then. Your life is now a video game in which you are the lead character. You're allowed 3 cheat codes to use. What do they do?
Make me invisible.
Invisible, that's a good one.
Yeah, and then I can do what the hell I want and get away with it.
Okay.
Maybe make me electric so that if anyone comes anywhere near me, they get a shock.
That's brutal, isn't it? Gross. There'd be no more crowd surfing, would there?
There's going to be enemies in a video game.
Yeah, this is true. And your final one, your last cheat code. Invisibility, electric shocks.
And I was going to be really rude then, but I won't do that. I can fly.
You can fly. I thought you were going to go for, you want Paul Banks' eyebrows. So you can attract Spice Girls. That's what it should be. Okay,
fine. I found the...
Well done, Sean.
Questions I found. Thank you very much. They were at this bottom of this email.
Go on then, the last one.
The last one. You have to lose either your sight or your memories. Which would you choose?
Ooh, that's horrible. That's really horrible.
Sight or memories?
He's really thinking about this as well. I can almost hear that.
I mean, it's a deep question.
It is.
Listen, we like to pretend that we're the podcast that just messes up, but we really ask the serious questions. Don't worry about that.
I'll tell you what, I'll keep my sight because I can make new memories.
There you go.
I can't remember what I chose.
That's a good answer. I like that answer. Okay then, Rick. Rick, it's been a real pleasure having you on the podcast. It really has. So we've got shed7.com for the tour dates coming up in October. Is that right?
Yeah, I think most of them have gone, but I think there's still some tickets for Stoke left. But yeah, if you go to our website, all the information's there, and you can pre-order our new album that comes out on 12th of January next year. Kiss in California's out, and there's a new single coming out probably in October.
Fantastic. So, and are you going to meet us for a game of snooker in December in York?
Listen, I would love that. Can you sort that out? Because I would love it. And I'm going to be around in December. So is it late November, is it?
I'm not sure. When is it this year, Sean? The UK's? It's late November, early December, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in November. And of course, because I'm now a part of the BBC coverage, I'm there from the start to the finish, whether I win or lose. So there's only Phil that will let this down.
I'll be there.
Right.
I'll be there.
I will be there, come what may. You'll be there, Rick. It's only Phil. The weak link in this game.
I will be there, believe me. We will get that sorted.
And we both share a daughter's name, don't we, Lottie?
We do, We've both got Lottie. She's very good. She's 4 now. She starts school very soon.
I'm following a progress of growing up on Twitter.
It is scary, isn't it?
It is crazy, isn't it? How quick it goes.
Yeah, my eldest, he's 19. He's studying music and sound recording at university. And I've got a 16-year-old and then a 4-year-old. And yeah, she's great. How's your Lottie then, since you've asked?
My Lottie's good. She's 14 now. So she's all right. She's not got her knuckles dragging on the floor like most teenagers. So that's a positive. But she's got lots of older brothers. So...
Which is always...
He's 25 now. I can't quite believe that he's 25, really, because I'm only 26. So I don't know how that's happened.
So, yeah, and I'm a couple of years younger than you, so that does actually work. Now, Sean, you may not be aware of this. Chris Moyles always famously refers to Rick as having about 14 kids, doesn't he? How many kids have you got, Rick?
Well, 4, but 6 in the house, 2 steps. So 6 in total.
Busy old house.
Is that just after or before he used to refer to himself as the saviour of Radio 1?
Listen, Shed 7 is his favourite band and has been for many, many years. Rick, we're going to let you get on. Thank you ever so much for coming on the 147 podcast. Shed7.com, check it out for all the tour dates. The new album out in January, new single Kissing California, out right now. Sean, we will see you in York at the UK Championships in December.
You will, absolutely, 100%.
Yep, absolutely.
Brilliant.
And Rick, we'll get you down and you will play a frame against Mr. Murphy.
That would be absolutely incredible. And we'll share a pint and continue this nonsensical conversation that we've been having for the past 45
minutes. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Rick, thank you very much. Take care of yourself. Thanks for coming.
Cheers, guys. Talk to you in a bit. Bye.
Take care. There you go. That was Rick Witter from Shed 7. Okay, we're going to take a very, very short break and then we'll be back to talk a bit of snooker.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. I'm actually looking forward to you playing Rick Whitter from Shed 7 at Snooker now. That's going to be great, Sean, at Christmas, that, isn't it? Or in December. That's going to be wonderful.
Isn't it fabulous to, you know when you just connect with somebody and you have that bit of chat and all. But, of course, like, you know, from everyone of our generation, and I am including you in this, Phil. You know, I know you're very nearly pensionable age. You know, I get that.
But do you know
I,
what?
I am including you in this. I am. You know, when you meet somebody like, you know, TFI Friday and that Britpop era, like that's our world.
Yeah.
And you meet somebody like Rick and it's just, you know, and then they have a connection to snooker. It's like all your Christmases have come at once, isn't
it?
Yeah,
he's a proper fan. This is why I wanted to get him on. He's a proper fan. You say about me being old, right? Now, in all seriousness, Rick, we went to the same school. He was, I think, 3 or 4 years above me at school. Now, I'm 47. Rick's just turned 50 last year. He looks amazing, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
literally,
By comparison, we need to have some serious conversations because,
wow,
you know,
that's charming. Absolutely charming. Okay, let's talk a bit.
He must have had some work done. He must have had Botox or something.
I actually doubt that very much. And, you know, he's lived a life as well as Rick. He's had a very fun life, so...
As a
fantastic.
Rock star, Botox is the last thing he's injected into himself.
We hope you all enjoyed that as much as we did, because we really did. So let's get on to a bit of snooker then. There's been the CBSA event over in China. Why weren't you there, Sean?
It's a good question.
Oh, have I hit a sore one?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Okay.
Genuine answer is that when I was invited to go and play in it, it wasn't marketed to me as an official CBSA event.
Okay.
So I was concerned that there would be sanctions for players who played in it.
Right.
Not having the permission from WST commercially to play in these events.
Okay. Now, it was a CBSA tour event, which I think they've made an agreement of some sorts, I heard, where that they're allowed to invite so many players across from the main tour to play on it. Judd Trump was there, Kyron Wilson was there, John Higgins, Mark Williams, Jack Lizowski went across. And I think Judd won it in the end. I think Judd won. A lot of the big names got through to the last four over there. And it's looked great. I've got to say, all the pictures and everything looks like everyone's had a great time. And hopefully it's starting to boost snooker a bit over in China. We know the big events are returning over there, so I guess they probably needed this to start getting a bit of profile up over in China.
Yeah, do you know, listen, you know, we're all keen for snooker to recommence in the Far East, you know, China being one of the big catchment areas for snooker. Not the only one, but one of the biggest, if not the biggest, I should say. And this and other events and other appearances by players are part of the building blocks of getting the tour back together following the pandemic. We've got the Shanghai Masters coming in maybe 4 or 5 weeks' time. There's the International Championships, which is going back out in China. And, of course, the new Wuhan Open.
Yep.
So, you know, and, of course, we're promised, if you look at Stephen Hendry's YouTube channel and other interviews that have been done with Jason Ferguson and Barry Hearn, we're led to believe that other events in the Far East will be coming onto the tour this season.
Well, I was going to mention this. I heard Jason talking in an interview, and listen, Jason's always positive about snooker, okay? I've never, in the midst of the pandemic, I didn't hear Jason being negative about snooker, but he does sound very, very positive, and he's hinting at the calendar filling up even further for this season, which is, I mean, that's wonderful news, isn't it?
It is. I mean, listen, you know, as a player first and foremost, and I know there's been a lot of talk over the last season or two about me moving into other areas of the game, but as a player first and foremost, what we're looking for is opportunities to win tournaments. I think WST have taken a bit of criticism over the last season or two, which is unfair because the pandemic was unprecedented. And there is no real full understanding of the damage that that did to the tour, really. And I think we're all still coming out of that. So I think, you know, once we're back to where we were pre-pandemic, I think we can have a full look at a comparison as to where we were versus where we are. And then I think criticisms will be a bit fairer. But, you know, whilst we're talking about criticisms, I think one of the things we really ought to just shine a light on is the new, well, I say new, the live scoring system.
Yeah, there's been a lot of chat about this. Now, it was announced some time ago that they were migrating onto a new system. That was going to take time. There would be a system in place. In the meantime, while that happens, there's a new app coming, a new WST app, a new WST website there. They're in bed with some really big players in that industry, in the digital industry, who are putting something together. But in the meantime, they need to kind of bridge the gap between the old system and the new one with a live scoring solution while that was sorted out. Now, it failed. It didn't work. Can I just say, you've mentioned there about criticism of WST. Cut them a little bit of slack. Yeah, you know, yes, it hasn't worked, okay? They will now be trying to sort that, I'm quite sure, okay? They've put a statement out to say, look, yes, it did fail, and we are on top of it. We are putting something in place. A lot of it, I think, was down to data scraping or something was what they put. They are coming up with a new website. They're coming up with a new app. They're coming up with new live scoring. All this stuff is very, very expensive. All this stuff takes a hell of a lot of time. The old app got a lot of stick. I actually used it a lot. The old app got a lot of stick. In many ways, it was really good. It just didn't work all that well.
Listen, I was on the board.
Yep.
Nobody wants to shout the praises of WST and WPBSA louder than me. But you have to get these things right.
You do, and I think they are. That's what they're now trying to do.
These things can't come to market not ready.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think in many ways, like I said, the app in some ways was really good, but it had more flaws than it had good points, really. And I do think that they are now addressing that. And I think people need to cut them a little bit of slack while they get it addressed and while they actually get that sorted, because they are doing so. And I guess that's just going to take a bit of time. So
maybe it was tested. Maybe it was tested behind closed doors. Maybe it was means tested, rigorously put through its, you know, paces by everyone all concerned. And maybe these things, but shouldn't it have been ready to go when things started, when the season kicked off? Shouldn't the ability for members of the public to follow the scores of snooker matches been ready to go?
You would have thought so, yeah. You would have thought so. For whatever reason, it's gone wrong. So that is getting sorted. Now, what they have said, they've put out a statement to say there will be a working system in place for the next set of qualifiers, which I think, is it the English Open qualifiers next? I'm not sure.
Thankfully, I've been held over in a few of the tournaments, so I think it may be the Wuhan qualifiers.
It might be. Well, whatever the next qualifiers are, they've said it will be in place, it will be working for that, okay? So they have said that will be working for then. So, you know, fingers crossed, really. Just on another point, just talking, I was watching the Netball World Cup final earlier on, England lost out to Australia in the final, but they reached the final for the first time, I think, ever, which is brilliant. We've got the FIFA Women's World Cup at the moment, football. There has been a World Cup of snooker before. Should there be another iteration of that?
You know, I think it's really hard when you try and force what is a single-player sport into the, you know, pretend world of a team sport. And I just think people who play on in team sports think differently to individual sports. I think the Ryder Cup is one of the very few times the crossover seems to work. I can't stand team sports. Like, they just do nothing for me at all.
Well, I thought about this. This is how boring I am. I was thinking about this, and I looked at the different formats that have been tried before and different things. Now, I watch the Ryder Cup, and the Ryder Cup's amazing because what they do is they shoot from one hole to another hole to another hole, and you see all the action, don't you? And you see, Ian Poulter's on the ninth. He's got a putt for birdie to go three up. He gets that. Then it goes to the fifth hole where you've got someone else on a putt to get whatever. And it's great. Now, what I was thinking was, and this is doing exactly what you just said you shouldn't do, but three players from each nation, three tables in the arena, three matches all being played at the same time. All best of sevens. So you've got three English players against, say, three Chinese players. They're in the arena and you can't have a draw because it's three and they're all best of sevens, so none of them can be a draw. So the closest it can be is 2-1. And you have the three games going on at the same time. And you could have that jumping around from one table to another kind of coverage, which I think actually might work. Now, the challenge, of course, is finding enough countries that have got three players who could play in that. Now, when you look at the FIFA World Cup, the Football World Cup, you get countries that aren't very good, okay? When I was a kid, Honduras, the ones that were two stickers in the Panini album, two stickers, two heads on one sticker, okay? The likes of Honduras. It was Cameroon back then, but they're good now, okay? But you see, that's what this could do.
Can we just stop for a second? How good was the Panini sticker album?
Oh, it was amazing. It's still there. People still get them. It's still incredible. A big thing. But you used to get the England were always one sticker, one player, yeah? And then you'd get South Korea, two players, one sticker on its side, okay? Now, those countries, now, the likes of Cameroon were one of those countries. They were a two players per sticker country. And then they grew and developed and got better because they were playing in World Cups and it shone a light on the sport in the country. They got money from it and everything else. That might happen in snooker. So if you were to bring in Germany, for example, great example, Germany. So who would you have in the German side at the moment? Three players from Germany. You've got Lukas Kleckers. You've got Simon Lichtenberg. Who would be the third? I'm not sure. But there's an argument to say Germany are two players to a sticker in the Panini book, aren't they? Okay. But that might help boost the sport of snooker in Germany even further than it already is and give it some more profile. Belgium would have a reasonably strong side. Obviously, England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, Ireland, decent size. China, decent side. Australia, you've got Neil Robertson, Ryan Thomason. not sure who your third one would be, but. And there's other nations you could bring in. And yeah, some of them are going to get whooped. They will do. But that happens in every World Cup. That happens in the Football World Cup, doesn't it? Like I said, the likes of Honduras and countries like that are two players to a sticker. I think it could work. I think three tables in operation at once, it could work.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I think you've got two problems. I think, firstly, where you hold the tournament is crucial because if Neil Robertson gets confused, he could end up anywhere.
Don't do that one. I've just taken a mouthful of water.
you know, he would need his hand holding to be taken to wherever the venue was. There's just no way around it. Because, you know, on tour, we have different rankings. Obviously, you've got the world rankings, provisional rankings, the World Grand Prix rankings. And then amongst players, we have missed plane flights rankings.
Well, that's why it'd be a team, because he's got Ryan Thomason, who's his mate, to help him get to the venue.
Neil is number one on the missed flight rankings by some distance. Like, he would have to not take a flight for the next 10 years to be caught. is incredible. Now, in all seriousness, the big problem you've got for us in team sports is that snooker, it isn't a team sport. And none of us grow up in that team environment. It's alien to every snooker player. And so it's not something that we think about or look to as top of our list. It's not a priority. Even when, I mean, I fronted the bill for the for snooker to get into the Paris Olympics this, you know, next year. A few years ago, went and fronted the bill and made a big speech in the Eiffel Tower. And tried to front the bill for us to get in. And we missed that. And we've missed every opportunity, despite being a founder member of the Paralympic Games, which a lot of people don't know. Snooker was one of the founding members. And the work that the WDBS with disability snooker do still to this day is phenomenal. We're a founding member of the Paralympics, and we're still not a member of the Summer Olympics. I think goes a little way to describing our kind of, we're all a bit miffed with team sports. It's just not something that we do. And I think to get into that mentality where, I've spent my life playing for me.
Mm.
To then go to playing for teammates it is just very, very different. And it's one of those things that makes snooker, it almost makes snooker completely unique, because even, the other single player sports that you can think of, most of them have a place or a presence in a team environment. Snooker doesn't really have that. There is no snooker player alive who would put the, let's take Team GB, for instance, as we're both British. There isn't a snooker player alive who would put Team GB at the Olympics for a gold medal above playing at the Crucible Theatre.
Yeah, but there isn't a tennis player alive that would put a gold medal ahead of Wimbledon. I know. So
they would put it ahead of other things.
Yeah, very true. So what do you think, listeners out there, at 147 Pod, all over social media, should there be a World Cup? If so, what should the format be? Let us know on social media. Now, Sean, you did front the bid for snooker to get into the Olympics. Snooker didn't get in, but breakdancing did. Are you taking any responsibility there or not?
I'll take the full blame for it.
Okay, it's been a different kind of podcast tonight. So there's been no rant. There's going to be no pointless questions. We've had Rick on from Shed 7, which was great fun. We're going to do a few listener questions, though, just before we go. We will begin with Niall Greenfield on Facebook. Hi, Niall. Sends a lot of questions into us, actually. He's great, is Niall. How long do you get to keep trophies for? Is it the full year until the event is staged again? And what about discontinued events?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of people wonder this, when they see the trophy presented. The eagle-eyed viewers amongst us will notice that there's a few trophies that get recycled. I'm thinking of the Champion of Champions.
Yep.
For instance, Matchroom obviously promote and run and own that event. That Champion of Champions trophy has been used for more things than I'd like to say.
Ping Pong World Cup.
I think it's been used for the Ping Pong World Cup. It's been used as the Moscone Cup. I think Barry Hearn keeps his champagne in it. It's been used more times than I'd like to mention. Certainly in terms of the Triple Crown events, I think you get the trophy. Jesus, it's 8 years since I won one of them. The Masters in 15 was the last time I won a Triple Crown event. And I think things have changed a little bit since then. Certainly all the players get a replica now. I think they get to keep the real trophy for a period of time, maybe a few months or so. And then they give it back and they are replaced with a replica. Interestingly, obviously with commercial copyright issues and people being scared and frightened of people pretending they've got the real world championship trophy, if you win the world title, you are given a 3/4 size replica, not a full size replica. Whereas if you win the Masters, you're given a full size replica of the Paul Hunter Trophy in beautiful Waterford crystal. Which is very, very special. But yeah, it's not always a given, funny as it sounds, it's not always a given that you get to take the trophy that you're presented with on the night.
Mm.
It's not always a given that you get to take it with you in the car home, much to the dismay of anybody waiting to see it.
I can imagine. I think the big question we're asking here is, has Matt Selt got the Indian Open trophy on his bedside cabinet?
Well, Matt Sell is a very, very dear friend of mine, and I can assure you that the Indian Open Trophy, of which he is still the reigning and defending champion.
He is.
From 2003. not think that's quite right. Maybe, well, how long ago is it since he won that tournament?
7 or 8 years, I think.
17?
Yeah, it must be about that, yeah.
He is the reigning and defending Indian Open champion, is on his mantelpiece.
Oh, there you go.
In his lounge.
There you go. There's no shock there. Okay, Sean, question.
Cameron Pentland from Twitter says, has anyone ever potted a red from the break in a professional match?
I don't know.
Well, I think, obviously, to do so, you'd have to get the reds moving. Anyone who's anyone that's been to one of my shows, which, you know, I tour the country doing regularly every weekend, will know that I always break off hitting the back cushion first and splashing the reds everywhere. And there is always a chance that a red will go in. There haven't been many players who've done that in professional play. I can only really think of Quinton Hamm.
Yes.
Who might have done that at the World Championships and other events. There is always a chance. As I say, black cushion first, into the back row of reds. If you hit the third red in the middle, slightly half ball, a red will go near one of the middle pockets. And I've done it before where you do an exhibition, you break off from the back, splash the reds, one goes in, and you clear up and your opponent doesn't get a shot.
Wow, and they've paid money to play you. Lovely.
But not off.
Okay, we don't know is the answer to that. We don't know. I've certainly never seen it. Sean's never seen it either. So there you go. Okay, Brandon Clapperton on, great name, Brandon, on Instagram. Love the show. Keep it up. That's one way to get your question asked. What do you think about professional snooker players crossing over into pool events? And would Sean ever do this? I think it's great. It's funny, on our season preview, we talked about Gary Wilson crossing over, playing a bit of nine ball pool. He's not a great start to the season, it's got to be said, and there could be a little hangover from that. Would you do that, Sean?
Well, never is a long time.
Yep.
But I don't think you'll ever see me play English eight-ball pool.
Okay.
Ever.
But nine-ball?
Nine-ball, I think, you know, diaries and commitments and all of that other stuff, you know, if we could agree, if we could, you know, make the date, I think I'd play that because I quite enjoy it. The club that I grew up in playing in Raunds in Northamptonshire had some nine ball tables. We used to play nine ball on a Saturday. It was one of the things that we used to do, as well as Karam. It was the only club in the UK that had a Karam table. That's the table with no pockets.
Yeah, yeah.
And we used to enjoy that as well. So I used to like playing nine ball. And of course, nine ball has just had its first official proper governing body set up under the tutelage of Emily Fraser from Matchroom.
Yeah, WNT, the World Nine Ball Tour, has been announced this week, actually. Fantastic step for the sport, isn't it?
Brilliant step for the sport moving forward. And I think, you know, Emily's been gracious enough to invite me to quite a few of the events, just haven't been able to make it work. I'd say you'll see me play nine ball on the World Nine Ball Tour at some stage. But in terms of English eight ball, unless they're going to pay me £1 million to play, forget it.
That's a no then. Okay, Sean, let's have one more listener question then.
Okay, let's go for Steve Hassock from Instagram. He says, I saw some clips of Kyron Wilson playing in China at the CBSA event, and the camera view was from the opposite end of the table. What are your views on different camera angles and heights to give different views of the action? Phil, what do you think?
That would make me twitch. I'd be twitching if someone did that. I was watching the Netball World Cup this week.
Hang on a second.
No. This is relevant. Actually, it's relevant. Okay, so they show netball from the side, obviously, with the hoops at either end, and they suddenly switched it to a shot from behind one of the hoops down the length of the pitch, and I lost it completely. I was like, "What's happened to the pitch? What's going on? Hey, what? And the floor looks different and everything." And it totally threw me. So, no, don't go putting a camera up at the other end. That's just wrong. That would look weird, though, wouldn't it? We're so conditioned to watch it from the black ball end of the table. That would mess me up completely. But in some events, we do have the back cam or the spider cam, whatever it's called. I think the shootout, they use that. where it actually flies around on wires at, above the arena, and it gives some really great angles, doesn't it?
You don't like change, do you?
No, I'm from Yorkshire, mate. Change is not good. It's on our shield and everything. Change is not good.
I actually enjoyed the shootout, and there was that camera. It was like a drone camera. It was flying around. Now, it nearly took Dave Grace's head off.
Well, he's about 8'6".
Yeah, I mean, this is an issue. You know, let's not skirt around it. But no, I'm all for it. I'm all for different camera views. Do you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see multiple different camera views available to the public.
Wow.
And the public can choose which camera view they watch.
But not from the balk end. Just side on, yes. Swooping down, yes. Not from the balk end as it is from the black end, because that's just going to break my head.
I think the balk end's a great camera angle. Do you know why?
Go on.
Because it shows the public what we as players see.
Well, should we have player cam then? Should we have player cam? Should you wear a GoPro on your head as you're playing so we can actually watch it from your perspective? Now, that'd be good. Or ref cam?
Well, I think ref cam is a missed opportunity. I think it's been missing for a long, long time. Anyone who's watched Mission Impossible knows that these small cameras are available. And should they choose to accept it, any of the referees could wear a lapel camera.
There you go.
And show the world what they see.
What do you think at home? At 147pod across all social media, should there be different angles? Should we have player cam? Should we have ref cam? We really hope you enjoyed our chat with Rick Witter from Shed 7. We enjoyed it, that's for sure. It was great to get someone on who's a snooker fan. We hope to do more of that in the future. Sean, anything to add?
Absolutely not. Just to echo what you've said, it was fabulous having Rick on. Guys, let us know in the comments. Comment on our socials, on Twitter, on Instagram, all over the place, on Facebook. Let us know. We really do want to do more of the guest specials, have people on. You know, we are the snooker podcast that isn't a snooker podcast. Our goal is to have non-snooker players on. All the other podcasts have snooker people on. We don't want to do that. We want to have people from a different walk of life with a connection to snooker. If you enjoyed it, let us know. Get involved in the comments. And if there's enough of you who liked it, we'll do it again.
Absolutely. So that's at 147pod across all forms of social media. We shall see you in a fortnight's time. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.